On April 7th, 2013, a call was made to 911.
Hi, ma'am. This is Scott Sunford. I was robbed last weekend. Anyways, after the robbery, I had an ADT alarm system installed, and they put it on a one-week trial period where if anything went off, nobody would respond. And today at 324, 327, and 328, I had three census trips, and I've been out of town with family for a funeral. My wife was home. And I
did somebody break into the residence?
I don't know. I've been out of town. I'm just on my way back, and I haven't been able to get a hold of the wife, so I was just hoping somebody can come meet me out there. It's probably nothing, but I would feel better.
When the police arrived on scene, they found Scott Sunford standing behind his car, aiming a handgun at his home. The police found this strange, not only because the home appeared dark and quiet, but also because Scott was a veteran of the military. If Scott was armed and he suspected his wife might be in danger, why didn't he go inside and check on her? The police entered the home and everything seemed normal until they entered Scott's bedroom. On the floor, they found the body of Scott's wife, Desiree, with 9 gunshot wounds. A jewelry box and laptop were missing from the home, so it appeared that it may have been a burglary gone wrong. The problem with this idea is that usually when a person finds a thief in their home, that thief will run away. The crime scene showed police that Desiree had been shot 3 times, which put her on the ground. And after she was down, the shooter shot 6 more times. Realizing they had more questions than answers, the police asked Scott to come in and give his official statement.
Do you understand each of these rights as I explain them to you?
Yes. Okay. There's one thing that does confuse me, though.
What's that?
Generally, if you read somebody their Miranda rights, that implies that they're under arrest.
No, not always. It just means that we're conducting our investigation. I can tell you, you're not under arrest right now.
Okay.
But we are here at the sheriff's office, and we're being recorded. So as a matter of protocol, when we're conducting our investigations, we do read people their Miranda warnings. Okay.
Oh, okay. That makes sense, because at least this way you have it on record that I'm receiving my Miranda rights. In case there is an arrest later on, you can't say I wasn't read my rights and get released.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay, so you understand what's going on, and having those rights in mind, are you willing to keep talking to me now about what happened out at your house?
Of course.
Okay.
As much as I can. I mean, I can't help you too much. I wasn't there, but...
Okay. Well, I wasn't either, and I just got here literally a few minutes ago. So can you just kind of start from the beginning and tell me what happened?
Well, quite honestly,
what
you
is
just
your understanding?
Me of something else. There was a shooting.
Right.
Okay. What can you tell me?
All I know is that we were called out to your house and that there was a body found. And that it looks like the person had been shot. So that's where I'm asking you to jump in and help me fill in the blanks as far as what led us out there.
Sorry.
Scott never entered the home, and all he knows is that the body of a woman was found inside. It hasn't been confirmed that it was his wife. The detective only confirms that the victim was shot. What they found strange, besides the lack of emotions when he finds out his wife has possibly been killed, he also doesn't ask any questions about the shooting itself. Is it my wife? Did they find the shooter? How did it happen? These are questions that a person in his position would usually ask.
All right. Let's see. You said today is now the, what, 8th?
It's the 8th now, yes.
Okay.
Just after midnight.
On the 6th at 10 in the morning was my Aunt Joy's funeral service in Pasco, or Kennewick at the city church. So that morning, I guess that'd be Saturday, I left the house at probably 8:30.
Okay.
And that was the last time I was there the last time I was in my house. And I was going to be a little later than expected, because the idea was I run up, go to the funeral, hugs, handshakes, turn around, go home. And, I had got some family from the coast from all around that I hadn't seen in quite some time. And a lot of that side of the family is kind of yuppies that I don't get along too well with. You know, I'm blue collar, military mechanic. Don't really hang out with the sharp dressed crowd too much.
Yeah.
And during that drive on 82, I tried repeatedly. In fact, let's see if I can give you some times. My dad and my grandpa and I had been joking around about how, it's strange, Des hasn't called yet. You know, she hasn't been bugging me yet today, because she's a real stickler on the times. She schedules tight.
Yeah.
I adapt and overcome and kind of go spontaneous. So we'd been joking about that. And let's see. All it's showing is the last phone call to her at 9:11 p.m. But
that's the last time you tried to call her?
Yeah. Anyways, I'm sure the phone records could give you more specifics if you need them, but all along the drive, I just kept calling her randomly, trying to get a hold of her. And I sent her a text even at one point, you know, why aren't you answering? And just wasn't getting anything from her. And it was kind of freaking me out because, well, after the robbery last weekend, Deputy Wuchek had said that it looked like they had been interrupted or spooked or something and that they may be back. So the next day we had a ADT system installed, and it was all kind of starting to build up and driving me a little nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And before I even made that turn off to the Yakima Highway, you know, maybe 45 minutes, half hour outside of the Tri-Cities, it was kicking in. And I kept thinking, you know, maybe I should just call somebody and have them go check on her. Maybe I should call the police. Oh, no, that's silly. She's probably in the shower. She's probably going to the bathroom doing something. Or she's outside because she'd said something about wanting to do some yard work. So I had to fix the tire on the wheelbarrow for her. So probably left the phone inside. Or she's taking a nap. It's on silent. You know, I just kept telling myself everything's fine. And I couldn't take it anymore. If I call and she doesn't get it, usually within 10, 15 minutes, she's picked up the phone and called me back. You know, what's going on? So by this time, it had already been like an hour of me trying to get a hold of her with nothing. And I took her car to the Tri-Cities and left mine because, well, the last weekend when we were out of town was when it became illegal to be running studs, and I still got my studs on the charger. Mm-hmm. So it was like, don't need a ticket. And Crown Vic's full of gas, charges on E and has studs. Come on. And so she convinced me to take the cop car. So I took hers, and she said she didn't want to drive my car. She's like, I'm not even going to drive it. Don't even bother leaving me keys, whatever. Well, it's keys anyways. If you need it, take it. And so I wasn't expecting her to be gone. Really didn't think she'd go anywhere. And with the way the wind was, I knew she wasn't going to take the bike anywhere. She's kind of a picky rider. And so it was driving me nuts. And about the time I got on the Conowhack Road-ish area, it was too much. I called. And the first gal I talked to, I told her, you know, I'm probably just crazy, but I checked my phone a little while ago, and I got the alarm system was set to arm stay, meaning that she's at home. So that kind of implies that she was there.
Mm-hmm.
And the motion detector is turned off for the stay home, and the motion detector comes on for stay gone. Well, when it's home, the door switches still work. And when I checked the phone and I saw that both doors had tripped within close time frame of each other, when I looked at it, it said front door open closed like 3:24, and then back door open closed 3:27, open closed 3:28. So in my head, I put that together as she goes in the front door, out the back door, and then, you know, obviously shuts the doors behind her, and then comes back in the back door and shuts it. So she should be home. So why isn't she answering me? She should be in the house. Because that's in, out, in, you know?
Scott claims that while he was driving home, he was unable to make contact with his wife. This worried him so much that he called 911 to ask for a wellness check. What's interesting is that after he makes the call, Scott decides that instead of continuing to drive home to see if his wife is okay, he drives around in circles waiting for the police to get there first.
I kind of stalled a little bit. I drove around waiting, just giving her that chance to call me and giving the deputy a chance to get free and get over there. And I headed to the house and I pulled down the driveway. And I went down the driveway to the left and I fired up my spotlight and I pointed it at the back door. I noticed my charger's there, so she must be home. I stayed there. I kept waiting. I kept waiting. I couldn't go in. I didn't know what the hell to do. So I backed the car up a ways and got on the phone. And I called my friend Brian that lives out in Glebe. I can't walk in and see anything. If something's wrong in there, I can't see it. But at the same time, somebody broke in when she was there and she got hurt or restrained. And I was sitting out in the car, sitting outside while she's scared. And I can't go in there to help her. That was going to drive me nuts. So just as I was regaining myself, getting it back together, getting ready to do it, the deputy from Moxie pulled up alongside me. And God, it could not have been better timing. Because right then I was able to just say, hey, my alarm system's on. It's off. Here's my keys. Please. I can't do this. And yeah, I just waited there. And he walked around. And I stayed at my car. Had the spotlight on the back door still. Had the door open. Standing in the door, you know, using it for cover. In case he spooks him out the rear. And had my weapon ready, but not drawn. And just stayed there waiting. And he circled the residence. And he went up from around the back side and all along the picture windows and across the back by the master bedroom and bath, mm-hmm. around the fence, onto the patio and in the front door. And he came. It had been a little while. It seems like I should have seen lights coming on. I should have seen flashlights in the windows, something. And I got nothing. And I didn't hear anything either. So I walked around and I wanted to see if the bikes were there too. Because, you know, maybe she was bound and determined. She had to run down to the store for something.
She has her own bike that she rides?
Yeah, I got her one of the newer bike than mine. I got her a 2010 Sportster 883 Iron and welded up a little cargo rack for the back of it and everything so she could use it for school. And so I went into the garage real quick and I checked to make sure the bikes were there. Yeah, both bikes are there. My car's there. Her car's here. I look over and there's the deputy standing out on the front patio looking like he's on the phone or on the radio or something. He had a device up to his head. And he saw me and immediately started walking over. And I didn't make it any more than about halfway to the gravel to him when he said, you know, go wait over by the car. I'm coming with you. Let's go over there. He said, I opened the door and I called for Dez and I got no response. I hollered police department, nothing. I didn't see a dog. Nothing's going on in there. It just doesn't seem right. I got backup coming. Next thing I know, they come outside and one guy's patting me down. They're asking if I'm armed. I'm like, yeah, I just told the other deputy, got a 45 right side inside the waistband, hip holster, you know. And I had it in the car because, well, it's my dad's old gun. You know, I was bringing it up from the Tri-Cities. And when I was pulling into the house, I stopped up at the end of the driveway, right up there by the dumpster, about halfway to the house. And went around, popped the trunk, and quickly slapped it on before I came down. So I was ready to go. And so they took the gun and patted me down, and they pulled the Surefire flashlight out of my back pocket. I haven't seen that yet. And took whatever else they wanted and had me sit in the back of one of the cars. And one of the deputies told me that there was a deceased woman inside. And that was all he would say about it. He obviously, I mean, I understand he can't ID her, so you don't know her. That's probably her.
Okay.
So I guess as of now, I still can't say for sure, but I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I believe that it was your wife that was found inside the house.
The detective finally confirms that it was in fact his wife's body, and all Scott can say is okay. Scott doesn't ask any further information about what happened to his wife. Instead, the conversation turns to the gun he was holding.
You said that you had your dad's 45 with you.
Yeah, my dad was a sergeant with the Franklin County Sheriff's Department for many years. And he had an old 80 series Colt Mark IV 1911 that was his duty pistol for many years. And he shot competitively for the police department. Got all kinds of great awards for it and everything. And after the deployments and everything, he's like, heirloom.
It's here now. Yeah.
So,
did you keep any other guns inside the house?
Yeah, I had a few.
Okay, what kind of guns did you have in there?
Let's see, I had, well, let's go with Dez's. When her grandfather died, her mom left a few guns to us because I'm a military guy, I shoot. I got Dez going on it, so she left a Remington Wingmaster.
A shotgun?
Yep, and a Remington Huntsmaster, which is a pump action 30-06. And then two revolvers made by Haas. They were Sig Sauer before Sig Sauer got together.
What caliber are the revolvers?
One of them is a 22 long rifle, and one of them is a 357. They're both single actions. Dez also had a carry pistol that was a Ruger LCP 380.
None of the guns found in the home matched the bullet casings found near Desiree's body. As the interrogation plays out, Scott tells the detective the real reason he wasn't home when his wife had been killed. Scott claims that he and his wife had an open relationship, and he had been visiting his girlfriend, Paige Blades. Scott explains that not only is he in a relationship with Paige, but so is his wife.
You know, I shouldn't go there because it's kind of rude, but, well, Dez didn't want me to say anything to anybody, but she kind of had mixed feelings. And if I'll do anything, but that's one thing I can't provide for. So at one point, her and Paige had a little thing going for a while there, a little experiment.
Okay, so it was Desiree and Paige who had the sexual relationship,
yeah.
But not you and Paige? Or
we all did.
Sometimes you and Paige too?
Honestly, we all did.
Okay. So you don't think it would probably would not have bothered Desiree to know that you were going to stay with Paige?
No. And honestly, we didn't even do anything. I was out on the couch anyways, because it's kind of one of those things where as long as we're going to do anything, we need to make sure we all are fine with doing anything. So
it's
everybody stays informed.
All right.
So if there's no information or no previous arrangements made, nothing happens. Avoid hard feelings.
So it sounds like you and Desiree had a pretty open relationship as long as the communication lines were.
No. Generally, no. Just with her.
Just with her. There was a special relationship with Paige.
Yeah.
How had you and Desiree been getting along lately?
Great.
No problems in the marriage?
No. Typical marriage things, you know, bickering and picking at each other for stupid little things.
Yeah. No big fights, though.
No. Don't worry. Kiss and hug and go to night happy. Or go to bed at night happy, you know?
Okay. The detective plans on speaking with Paige to hopefully get more information. But before he lets Scott go, he wants to know why he didn't go in the home to check on his wife.
Well, I'm just thinking, you're a big guy. You're what, 6'4"?
Somewhere up there.
6'4", 250. You've got a firearm on you. You've been in combat. I mean, you've done some serious shit that most people will never do. So if anyone's going to be willing to go charging in the house and make sure their wife's okay, it would seem to me that it would be you.
Well, it's not that I was afraid of anybody being in there. You know, I'll take on 100 people for her, that's fine.
Yeah.
That wasn't the concern, it was her.
You just don't want to see what may have happened to her.
Yeah.
And what did you think you might see if you went inside?
Roll around 1,000 of the worst things you could think of. The only reason I would have been forced to go in there, the only reason I could talk myself into it, was the fear that she still needed me in there. You know what I mean? Because if she was in there and she was hurt and scared or restrained, and I was sitting outside, just idly waiting, while she's in there going through that alone, that would have killed me.
Okay.
So if somebody else goes in there and it's fine, everything's empty, that's great.
Did Desiree have problems with anyone else? Was there anyone else that she has fought with recently or that you can think of that might want to hurt her?
Nothing. I mean, who hates an art teacher?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's an elective. Everybody that's in there wants to be there.
So she hasn't had problems with anyone?
No. Neither one of us.
Other than her relationship with Paige, did she have any other sexual relationships that you know of?
No, a few years ago, actually quite a few years ago, before we were even married, she cheated on me at one point with another guy, but you know, that's long since over with.
When you were dating, she
yeah.
had an affair? Has she had any affairs since you've been married?
No, not that I know of. She hasn't been good.
Okay.
Even though the detective found it strange that Scott never went into the home to check on his wife, it wasn't enough to charge him with anything. The police decided to interview Paige next, but her story was almost exactly the same as Scott's. The detective reported that it was almost as if she was coached to say what she said. Because Paige provided no new information, the case went cold for over a year. During this time, the police found out that Paige was pregnant, so Scott and Paige became their prime suspects. In the summer of 2014, the police received an anonymous tip, claiming they knew who the shooter was. The caller turned out to be Paige, and she claimed that her best friend, Marty Grismer, was the killer.
Okay, so obviously the big reason that I wanted to talk to you face-to-face was that we got the Crime Stoppers tip from you with some new information about the shooting.
Yep.
Did a little research based on the information that you sent us and found a picture of Marty Grismer. Is that the gentleman that we're talking about?
Yes.
Okay. Would you mind just initialing and putting the date below that? Normally I would do a montage, but you were so specific with your description about who it was that I felt pretty comfortable.
I'm sorry. Oh, he looks a little bit different now.
Okay. How How does he look different now?
He has hair. I can show you. That's what he looks like.
Okay.
It is quite a difference.
Well, he was about 18 in that picture, and he's 10 years later.
Okay. So, in the tip, you were pretty specific about some new information that's come to light. So, why don't you just tell me in your own words what you've heard, how you heard it, and I think that's as good a place as any.
Last week, I had Scott over. He was there for the week. And we were arguing. And Marty, his wife, was my babysitter at one point. And we had been up all night arguing and talking. And I asked Marty to come over and get the baby. So he came over and he picked him up, and everything was fine. Scott was asleep. What was going on, and he asked me if I wanted him to take care of this new woman like he did Des, and I asked him what he was talking about. The first time you came to see me, I was pregnant. We had just found out about 3 weeks before the shooting that I was pregnant. Marty was one of the first people that I told. And apparently, he decided that if the baby was Scott's like it was supposed to be, then Desiree would cause issues. Oh my God.
So did you told Marty that Scott was the father of the baby?
Oh, Marty knew that Scott and I were together, and Scott was the only one that I was seeing. And he's smart enough to put it together. Like, he asked me for sure if it was Scott's, and I told him yeah, because at the time I thought that was the case. The night of the shooting, you know, Scott and I went to dinner with a coworker, mm-hmm. and I had asked him to come over, and I always paid his gas whenever he made extra trips. I was a little bit short on money, and I asked Marty if I could borrow $20. So he came over and dropped the money off. We sat and visited for 15 minutes or so, and then he went home because he had to work the next day. It was pretty late at night, but then I had my $60 that I could give to Scott for gas. So he already knew that Scott wasn't going to be home. What he told me on Wednesday was that he had gone home, gone to sleep for a couple of hours, and he got up. I can't look at that. He had an extra clip of some old ammo that he had bought a few years ago. He ran out all of the ammo in his backyard until he had a single clip left. He had a gun. It was untraceable, unregistered, and He said he took it. He made sure that everything was wiped down, completely clean, no fingerprints on anything, none of the bullets, reloaded the clip. He turned his phone off before he left the house, and he took 24 out the back way to Scott's house. Marty was my best friend for a long time. Scott had given him a tour of the house a couple months before, and he knew that I had a key there. He knew that there was a key outside.
Do you know how he knew that?
Because he knew our routine. He knew it was just stuff that we talked about. I was excited about getting the house. I was excited about everything was new and, you know, it was just stuff that we shared. I never told him where the key was hidden. He said it took him probably 15 minutes to find it. He got the key. He went in the front door because he knew that that was the closest to the bedroom. The alarm went off when he opened the door. And Ada came out barking. Dez came out right behind her and he shot her. He shot her 3 times. She went down. He shot her some more. I don't remember how many bullets he said. It was a full clip. He let her get, I don't know, 10 or 15 feet away. And he got closer to her as she was trying to crawl away. He wanted to make sure that she had an open casket funeral. He went to the back of the house and moved the board off the window that Scott had put up after the robbery. Oh, that's not awkward at all.
Is that him trying to call you?
That was Scott trying to call me. His dad's here with me. I only told him that I was setting up a meeting with you. I haven't actually talked to him yet.
So he doesn't know the story about Marty? Is he going to react possibly violently, do you think?
That's why I didn't tell him. I waited for him to leave before I even could wrap my brain around the whole thing to put in a tip.
Paige is claiming that after Marty found out she was pregnant, he decided to take Desiree's life because he believed Scott was the father and he wanted them to be together. It turns out that Scott was not actually the father. Instead, the father was one of Paige's previous ex-boyfriends. What makes Paige's confession interesting is that on her phone, the police found text messages between her and Desiree, where Desiree tells Paige that she was not comfortable with her seeing Scott. They also found messages between Paige and Scott, where she told him if something ever happened to Desiree, she would take her place.
How close were he and Marty?
I wouldn't say that they were extremely close. Marty was my best friend. Marty and I started dating for a little bit until he found out about Scott, and I told him I couldn't see him anymore. But we were friends. We would go out together and stuff. They didn't. There's an old lady in Yakima. It's Scott and Des' old neighbor at the apartment. Marty helped me take care of her. And sometimes him and Scott would get together up in Yakima to talk about that. That was how Marty found the house and got the tour of the house, was because he was up there to see Lori. So he goes to the back. I think that he said that he exited the back door, walked out, walked back in to make it look like he had come through the back door because it was raining that night and he wanted to leave shoe prints. He put the key back in its hiding spot. He went back inside again, grabbed a jewelry box off of her dresser, and he left.
If you initiated another conversation with him, do you think he would talk to you about it more?
I'm sure he would. He worships the ground I walk on. He's obsessed with me.
Is that something that you would consider?
That's all I could think about the last 2 days.
What if there was a situation where we could put a wire on you? Would you be willing to talk to him with a wire on?
Even though the detectives believed that Scott and Paige were still involved, they didn't have any evidence that would lead to their arrest. Paige attempted to wear a wire and get Marty to confess, but Marty acted like he didn't know what she was talking about. A few weeks later, a coworker from Marty's job contacted the police, telling them that they found a plastic bag filled with gun parts in his office. The police were able to match the parts with the bullet casings found at the crime scene. This would lead them to Marty's home, more specifically his home office. Inside the office, they found a laptop and a jewelry box which had been stolen from Desiree's room. They also found shoes that were an exact match to the shoe prints found outside Desiree's home. The police found it strange that a year later, suddenly the evidence was found, and it was all out in the open for all to see. Regardless of how they got the evidence, it was more than enough to bring Marty in for questioning. Throughout his interrogation, Marty claimed innocence. He explained that he believed he was being set up by Paige because he had loaned her his gun just days before Desiree had been killed. At one point, Marty says he can't believe this is happening and that it is making him sick to his stomach.
Did you kill Desiree?
No.
You say no. Do you know who did kill Desiree?
I have a good idea that Paige had it done.
Okay. Were you present when she was killed?
No.
Were you involved in or aware of the planning of Desiree's death?
Not beforehand, and no.
Okay.
I mean, after the fact on that, I figured on there that she had done something.
Has Paige ever confessed to you that she killed Desiree or had her killed?
She gave me the impression on there that she had it arranged. She didn't say, yes, I had her killed. She didn't say that she'd done that, but she gave me the impression when I asked about that after the fact with the guns and everything else, like I got it back, I'd asked her, did you do something with this? Why did you ask for my gun? Why'd you do this on me? I don't know. I don't know why she wanted to keep me around. Maybe for this exact scenario. Maybe for you guys coming down on her and figuring it out so that she could use me on there and get out of it. That's the only thing that makes any sense in my mind on there. Is that she wants me to be the scapegoat.
Knowing that you won't say a word.
I don't know who killed her. I don't. I believe Paige had it done. I don't know if she did it. I don't know if she had someone do it. I don't know. That's the impressions I got, is that she had it arranged. I don't know what to believe. I have no idea what to believe out of her, what's true and what's not, what's a game.
The lack of a confession didn't stop the police from charging Marty with murder. Prosecution had more than enough evidence to take the case to trial, but instead, Marty would enter an Alford plea, which meant he never confessed but agreed the evidence outweighed him. In exchange for his plea, he was sentenced to 15 years in prison. Depending on who you ask, the detectives in this case still believe that Scott and Paige were somehow involved. One theory they have is that Desiree didn't want Paige and Scott together, and after Paige realized she was possibly pregnant with Scott's child, she devised a plan with Scott to end Desiree's life. Scott would have provided all the information she would have needed about the alarms in the house, and Paige would have used Marty's obsession with her to get his gun. She would then set him up with the evidence they collected when she realized she and Scott were suspects. This is one of many theories about this case. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this case, so please share them in the comments below.